Hey guys, Footy Focus Podcast, episode 6, filming on June 30.
Yeah, hey guys. We had our first guest on the show.
Yep.
So after this, maybe we'll record for about 15 minutes, and then at the end of it, I'll chuck on the interview we did. So do you want to say who it is?
Good little Skype chat with Jack Hudson. So he's a sports journalist over in Adelaide. Good Port supporter as well. So
yeah, very knowledgeable. So it was good to chat with Jack. And thank you for your time, Jack.
So we'll kick off with, I guess, the COVID update.
Yeah, sure. So so what's happened now? It's
so this round's been altered, the fixture.
Yeah, because Victoria's had a spike. So all the other states have locked Victorians out.
Yeah.
So Richmond were due to go up to Queensland.
Yeah.
So they've been, rescheduled to play in Melbourne and play another game at the MCG, which is... 30th game in a row or something.
30 out of 31, I think. And obviously SA have locked us out. Oh, not us, but Victorian teams tonight as well. So I think the next hub location is probably Sydney. So question I want to ask you was, should all 10 Vic teams be relocated to all these various hubs interstate?
Okay, so the reason why they'd do that is so the Victorian teams can play interstate teams.
Yeah, we've got a season finished.
I guess you just make sure that everyone plays everyone that they can, and then after that, relocate a few to different hubs around the country. And I wouldn't mind the Kangaroos going to Tasmania. Can get a few home games there.
Yeah, it's not a bad result.
I'm just happy to go anywhere and do whatever. If it means some players staying home, then so be it, I suppose. Yeah. Like, they do have other more important things to worry about than footy.
Yeah.
How do you agree?
Or? Yeah, I think, I mean, we obviously talked about this with Jack. I think players that are fathers-to-be in a few weeks or months, you can understand, but it shouldn't stop the season, I guess, because every team's in the same position. I mean, probably just means, Victorian teams won't get as many games in Melbourne, but whether that's counteracted by no crowds interstate for the first 5 or 6 rounds, it's up in the air. But, yeah, it's an interesting
We'll see what happens, we might maybe talk a bit about the state of the game, because that was a hot topic after Alex de Clarkson
put on
essentially had a go at his own game plan, right? Is that what he did?
Yeah, I'm not... you watched the game. What's your...
Yeah, I mean, it was an ugly game. The first three quarters... It was really bad. That's only because Hawthorn was so good defensively, which he had implemented, and he told his players to carry out, to do the cluster, like take ground and create stoppages and put pressure on and all that. And Kangaroos just couldn't move the ball forward with any flow or anything until the last quarter, which out of necessity, I suppose, they started to run a bit and take the game on. So if Clarkson wants to play a more attractive brand of footy, then just instruct it.
I think Chris Scott was the other coach, and if you watched any bit of the Geelong Melbourne game, it's pretty similar. Geelong didn't take the game on at all, and ended up being like a 50-50 game in the end. So it's a bit hard because coaches, I think we'll talk about potential solutions, but I don't think coaches should be given any input into how to fix the game, because they're just going to try and win. Like Clarko did, but just.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe skill level as well. Like, because we have expansion teams now, the quality of players diminishes a bit. So maybe cutting the list sizes might be an option, just to improve the skill level of players.
Yeah.
So, there's less turnovers and therefore less tackles and less pressure. So
yeah.
I'd be looking at that rather than doing any drastic changes and like having 16... on the field.
Yeah, that was floated, I think, by Chris Scott, and I don't think you should cut the players. I mean, interchange bench rotations, maybe. I think the one that I liked the most was the mark from any backwards kick, so make that play on automatically. Because you see it, I've watched probably 10 to 12 matches this year, and you see that's the thing you notice the most, just the backwards kicks.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, like you said, the congested, congestion of the ground, it's far easier to lock down a ground for 16-minute quarters than it is in 20-minute quarters.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your kind of take on that? Your ball-up idea last week as well.
This was like Tallback Radio mentioned this, just getting the game moving, not nominating two ruckmen.
Yeah.
Just throw the ball up, and if two players from one club goes up, then it's a penalty again.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
I think they got to look at that. And, just throw the ball up at the centre. Like, just bounce it for the start of the game or something.
I think there was a few instances they timed it as 8 seconds before, checking to see which Druckmann got nominated, make sure there's a clear space. So that's, you can automatically fix. So that's a good one as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's like in general stoppages. But, the start of the game, I know that's not going to really help with the congestion issue, but it's just a way to keep the
ball moving.
Yeah, game moving, yeah.
So talk about a few more.
Match review panel, couple of hits.
Yeah, so obviously Zach Merritt on Silvani, he's got a week for that. And then McDonald on Stewart, who didn't get a week.
I didn't see that one, actually.
So it was a bit of an innocuous one. They were kind of jostling, and he...
Behind the ball?
Behind the ball, yeah. So it wasn't a huge...
Yeah, I think Matthew Lloyd said, he shouldn't get rubbed out, otherwise it'd be the worst decision ever.
Yeah, so I think the question kind of... I mean, what do you think of Merritt's one? Do you think that was fair, or...?
I mean, it didn't look that bad. It was just a little hit to the rib. Yeah. But
I think the clenched fist got him.
Yeah, got him in a sweet spot, like Jack Silvani, I think he tweeted. But the review panel, they punish the player based on the medical outcome. And he was in hospital and had blood in his lungs or something. So in that sense, he did deserve a week.
Yeah.
But what Bergloin did to Dangerfield was far worse. Yeah. So...
So I think that's, the question, I guess, that comes from it is, should an injury result in an automatic suspension? I think the answer is probably, for me, it's no.
Yeah, it's no. Depends on the action. Yeah. I mean, that's what's frustrating for players, fans, and, anyone.
Yeah.
Do you reckon Toby Green's unfairly officiated by umpires?
Yeah.
Because there was a couple of calls on Friday night where... He clearly should have got the free kick, but it was called play on.
Yeah, it was two obvious ones that I saw. One round the neck, which would result in a set shot. Now, he was still best on ground, won the Giants the match along with Tom Green.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Tim Lane, who's he's still a broadcaster. So he had a good tweet. So he talked about Buddy. So his career frees for and against in the first 9 years. Oh, career-wise, sorry, it was 191 freeze four and 346 against in the first.
He's just clumsy though. I think. But that's but he's just clumsy. Yeah. He's just dangly and just goes high too much.
I think Tim Lane's point was Buddy's one is a bigger sample size. It's pretty much one.
What's
to
his
two.
Point? What's his point?
Well, he's like one free to two frees against. Where Toby Green's, if you look at the stats, it's 197 frees four and 209 against. Yeah, level.
But I think umpires pay. Freeze against Buddy because they're there. Because Buddy's huge, and when he goes to tackle someone, he's more likely to get a shorter player high.
Yeah.
Whereas Toby, umpires just don't pay him because they have a vendetta against him. Well, because of his sister, So I think it's a different reason, but the ratios are similar. Is that his point?
I think Buddy's, Toby's only minus 11, minus 12 so far. Mm-hmm. So it's not that big of a.
Yeah, but they got to umpire
on the merits.
Exactly.
Yeah. So on Jeremy House, so it was an injury-riddled weekend. Do you think the Pies can still win the flag without Jeremy if he's out for the whole season?
Well, who have they got to cover him? Langdon is sort of still a bit away, I think.
Yeah. Lyndon Dunn.
Yeah, he's had a knee, Rico, and he's coming back. I don't know where he's at. So maybe he's a replacement. I don't know where Matt Scharenberg is. He would be a good replacement if he can get his body right. But no one is going to replace Howe.
No, I can't, So I think we talked about this with Rance and Richmond when he went down round two, I think it was, and they ended up winning the flag. So I don't think the Tigers' defence is... I think Tigers' defence is better than Pies, but you wanted to free up, I guess, Darcy Moore, who's the key.
Yeah, maybe they have to send Majacek back, but I don't know. He used to be a defender, actually.
So Port Melbourne?
Majacek. I think he was drafted as a defender.
He's got history.
So, Buckley would have to come up with something because it seems likely he'll miss... the year.
And I wanted to ask you about Tom Green. So did you watch any of that match?
Yeah, I did. I watched a bit.
So the heat was on, he was probably the best player in the last quarter, wasn't he?
Yeah, the last few minutes, he was just in the middle and he's very composed in traffic. Yeah. He gets his arms free and has a bit of time and he makes the right decisions.
How tall is he? Because he's huge.
He's like 190
he just
at
towered
least,
over everyone at the top of his head.
Another one of these academy prospects, and I think he got the Rising Star nomination this year. But He was very good.
Yeah. So you think Tom Rao's still the clear favourite?
He's still the best out of last year's draft, yeah. But Tom Green will keep out the Caldwells and the Haitleys. Yeah. He's just another one of these gun midfielders on their production line. So
yeah,
club should be looking at trading for the other players.
Yeah. So we can move on to your match recap.
Okay. We talked a bit about Port with Jack.
It's been Port centric.
Yeah, we did talk about a bit about the Roos as well, but I'll just mention that this is the third game this year where Jack Zeeble's gone off injured halfway through the game, and then Kangaroos have come back in that time.
Okay,
interesting. So common denominator is that, yeah, Jack Zeeble going off is what sort of drives Kangaroos to play better. So I don't know what it is. Like, Jack Zeeble's never been, like, naturally quick or fit.
No, and it's not his strength, yeah.
And this year, he can't seem to be jumping and marking. He's not taking any contested marks or anything. His kicking's gotten worse as he's gotten older.
Okay.
So he's either out of form or the end's coming sooner than he thought.
Okay.
So I think he might be injured this week with a knee injury, and he had a bit of hamstring soreness as well. But I think he needs to find form, otherwise Reece Shaw, he has to start making calls.
Yeah.
Like, this is a short year, so...
He's your captain, though, isn't he?
He is. He's our captain. That's what makes it difficult. He probably should have given it up in hindsight.
So who's the next?
I think Robbie Tarrant's the one.
Okay, yeah. Well, he's indispensable member. He's selected him every week.
He's sort of 30 as well or something. But after that, you're looking at sort of guys like Jai Simpkin. He's shown leadership as well as... Yeah, but he's, again, like that 30-plus, So, but I wouldn't be giving it to Simpkin yet, but maybe Tarrant for a couple of years.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Zeeble would need to find some form because he's holding guys like Thomas, Taylor, Zerha back. Like, when he went off, guys like this started to play better.
What's the split between mid and forward for him?
Jack, like he's playing more... maybe 50-50, since Cunnington hasn't played the last couple of weeks, but he's pretty much a forward for the first two games. He's already dropped McMillan and Mason Wood, which I'm loving. So when Brad Scott was there, like, I used to complain that he'd back his players too much and we'd lose by 100 and he'd drop like one player. So Shaw knows that McMillan and Wood have had enough chances.
Yeah.
Next on the chopping block, I'd say, would be Zeeble and probably Attlee.
Yeah.
200 games, and he just he's never in the best.
Yeah.
So I don't think we can keep carrying these players.
Okay.
What do you think about
dropping,
underperforming players?
Yeah, I think that's a key. You need to, like you said, if you're not performing, you can't get a free ride.
Yeah.
I don't like, if you get one bad match, I can understand, but if it's a consistent, if they're consistently inconsistent, like Attlee's you've mentioned a few times, but Millen you've mentioned a few times here on this pod. So, yeah, I do agree with that.
And you've got to reward the players that are playing well in the VFL. And I think Essendon's Zaharakis and...
They're still getting
Bell games. Chambers, I think. Yeah, yeah, Ron Connolly was critical about them getting games.
Yeah.
So, yeah, sometimes you just got to... I know they're, like, beloved players and they mean so much to the team and the club.
Life members,
But... eventually, you need to start blooding young players. So, Shaw's done that. He debuted Cherry and Marnie and keeps pumping games into Hayden, who actually looked good this week.
Yeah.
First couple of games, he was a bit deer in the headlights sort of thing. But, no, that's about it then.
How was my boy Wingard?
Wingard was really good. I think forward or center, he was very damaging.
Yeah.
Every time he touched the ball, he'd be pretty effective. He'd be in the mix for AA again, I think.
Yeah, he's fourth in the coaches vote.
Yeah, so I think he's had one bad game, but otherwise, he's doing well. But I don't want to see Hawthorn have too much more success. Yeah.
What about Curtis Taylor's mark, the one he stole from Ben Brown? What was your thoughts on that?
That's probably the most talked about. I'm happy he wanted it. To see the confidence in the kid was encouraging. It would have been nice if he went back and kicked it. He almost kicked it.
Yeah, it wasn't far away.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so... but I think Ben Brown's just got to be a bit more demanding in that case because he sort of stopped Ben Brown. He didn't charge it. I think he saw Taylor in the corner of his eye. So he had a poor game, Ben Brown, but I think next time, you'd, as a senior player, you'd have to call for it, but it's good signs from Taylor to want to be in that position. Yeah,
I agree.
Do you want to preview the Suns versus the Cats?
Yeah, quickly? I think outside of Port Lines is probably the match of the round, I reckon. So it's at,
Cadinia Park.
Yeah, Cadinia Park. Yeah. What's it, GMHBA? Yeah. So yeah, second place Suns at the moment. So they've actually got a home final if the season stopped now. So it's a huge test for them. Obviously, Cats coming off a pretty poor performance, even though they beat the D's.
Mm-hmm.
I think Matt Rowell is obviously the probably the most talked about player in the AFL at the moment. So I think probably look to him to get a tag.
Will he go head-to-head with Selwood?
Well, Chris Scott's already said that he's going to get tagged. So, I mean, Guthrie's their most likely tagger. So, but I would, you'd love to see Rowell matched up on a Danger or Selwood at the stoppage. I mean, Selwood's kind of already anointed him as the heir to the throne on Twitter. So, love to see that.
Yeah, so this is a chance for guys like Bose and Weller.
Ainsworth, all those Ainsworth kind of players.
To get off the chain and do a bit of damage. Maybe Anderson can have a 20-plus position game.
Yeah, you'd like to think that. And obviously, I think Tuke Miller probably goes to Danger. Jared Witts, I think he's got a huge advantage in the ruck. I'm not sure if Stanley's coming back or if they stick with Radigalia, but I think Witts is going to probably dominate the stoppages. And your boy, Connor Buterick.
Buterick.
So you talked about him before he got nominated. Really good, before he got nominated. So
yeah, I mean, he was impressive. Like an academy player. He's another one of these products. And there's not many like defenders that come through like draft, like prominent. So yeah, so he's been a good one. So maybe he'll get matched up on a, I don't know who's dangerous forward, like Myers or even Ablett. Maybe Dallas, even J1 Ablett. Yeah, it'll be good for his development.
Obviously, Tom Stewart's a big loss for them.
So he's out for a month or something, isn't he?
Yeah, with that McDonald incident behind the ball. And then Ben King, I think, probably look to him to kick a 3 or 4 goal bag. I think he's looked likely the last, since round one, actually, to have a big bag. And we've talked about Rankin for a while. Hopefully, he gets unleashed. He's not on the injury list, so hopefully he gets unleashed for a debut.
Because I think the Gold Coast, after this, they have got to go to New South Wales to play a couple of games because they can't go from Melbourne into Queensland.
No. So it's got to, they'll be in Sydney for, I think, a big stretch.
So if they're in Sydney for a couple of weeks, say they play Giants in Sydney there, and then they can go into Queensland.
Yeah, I think that's the situation. I don't think anyone's coming to Melbourne anytime soon.
It's
going to
be very complicated, yeah.
So okay. I'm still tipping the Cats, but I think no one can probably stop Hawkins. I think that's the key matchup for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tip the Cats as well. I can't see.
But I would like to see the Suns win.
Yeah, the Suns. Because they can't keep winning forever. So.
Yeah, everyone's second favourite team.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
So we'll wrap it up. Yeah, we'll wrap it up and catch you next week.
Yeah, well, this will lead into Jack's interview. So, okay, so see you next week.
See ya.
Yeah, we'll start, I guess, just about your, I guess, career to date. So obviously why you got into journalism and obviously what you've done so far.
Yeah, so I got into journalism, probably midway through year 12. I did a bit of local reporting in Gawler for the Bunyip newspaper. And then I got the opportunity to interview Jason Akermanis, three-time, premiership player and a Brownlow medalist. Incredibly intimidating, but just the thrill of being able to be involved in that sort of football environment and meet these sort of names definitely had me set on journalism. So I'm still studying at the same time. I was very fortunate enough to get a job with the Barossa Herald up in Tanunda while still at uni, and then I moved across to the Bunyip a year and a half later, and before moving on to the Advertiser at in October last year. Obviously, certain things haven't worked out, but my next move announcement won't be too far away at all, that's for sure. But just because I can't play it, I can't umpire it, but I can sure as hell commentate on it. So that's why I want to be as close to sport as I possibly can.
Yeah, that's exciting. That's good to hear. I love your passion and enthusiasm for the game.
Yeah.
Stay tuned, obviously, with your next update too, because I'm obviously one of our few followers.
Gaan here, he was pretty much into journalism as well. In year 12, he decided to, he wasn't very good at it. I don't know. Wasn't, he's an accountant now.
Yeah, so I'm into accounting, so it's not a bit of a 180. But
and we always talk about footy, so that's why we wanted to do this podcast, because Yeah, we find that as we get older, we talk about footy less. So we thought about, starting this. So we started about a year ago. So you're actually the first guest we've had on. So we're very nervous and excited. So.
We, what was it? It was Cal Toomey, wasn't it? We tried to get Cal Toomey. You also know AFL.com. He's the draft guru. So he committed a few times, but then I think he got a bit busy and I see him doing an article every day. So I can understand.
Well, yeah, we wanted to get a journalist on, so it's good to have you on, Jack.
Last few words.
Yeah, the most important question, I guess, is why do you start supporting Port? Because that's obviously
50% of
our podcast
support.
So with Port, my grandfather, massive Port Adelaide supporter, so it was very much a family oriented sort of thing. I didn't really have a choice as much as my dad tried to sway me to Collingwood being a massive Pies fan. But it's just I was educated pretty early on the history of the club, how successful the club was, and just you feel as part of the club. And just I idolised Matty Primus growing up, always wanted to wear the number one, always wanted to be the ruckman, even though I'm definitely not a ruckman's height anymore. I'm just only, 192 around that. But, they were my heroes growing up, and they were successful. They stood for so much, especially those early days, just incredibly successful. It's been a bit of a journey. My pa passed away in 2011. So since then, I've just made sure that I continued what he sort of started to make sure that I continue my support for Port and be as loud and vocal and passionate as possible.
Obviously, your job to pass it down. So obviously, the next generation too. So like you can follow that legacy for sure.
Very much so.
And you live in Adelaide, do you, Jack?
Yes. I live in Adelaide. Very nice and quiet and quite COVID-free at the moment.
We're envious of you guys.
Posted something. To put a dome over Victoria.
Sorry about that.
Probably a good suggestion, actually.
So being in Adelaide and being in a city with only two clubs, how is that like with the rivalry with the Crows? Like being in Melbourne, we don't sort of understand that as much, I don't think.
It's intense. It's very intense. It's quite weird. You always talk to people who go, oh, what team do you support? And if someone says something like completely different, like say if they go St Kilda or Essendon, they're just like, oh, okay. So then it sort of diverts of how you want to talk about football, because usually if it's Port and Crows, it's you find out then it's either, oh, yeah, how good's this player? How good's this? Or, oh, your team is atrocious, and you explain to them why. It's very intense. The background behind it, obviously, regarding Port's entry to the AFL Port's bid to enter the AFL in 1990 sort of helped birth the Adelaide Crows. So it was always you're either with Port Adelaide or you're against them sort of mentality in this NFL. So there's a lot of background behind that, but it's amazing. The media coverage is intense and the media coverage is pretty bang on when one side's saying you're biased and the other side's saying you're biased, because that means you're pretty neutral. You're sitting down the middle. But it's very unique. I've been over to Melbourne to watch a few games, and it was weird. I came back from Geelong watching Geelong and Adelaide with a few mates, and then there's Bulldogs and St Kilda fans coming out of Marvel Stadium. It's very different to Melbourne, but to live in a two-team town, it's quite intense, and I can understand why a lot of players would leave the Adelaide or Perth bubble, because I imagine it's very similar over there.
Yeah, I think even with Danger as well, like he's obviously gone to Geelong and, very quiet atmosphere compared to, the Crows and Adelaide,
That was a good in-depth answer. Yeah, thanks. How did you want to go with the
list? We'll ask you about the prison bars later on. We'll save the most important question. I guess one of my question with Hinkley, obviously he's getting a lot of good publicity now, but I mean, I'll put my hand up after we went to the Roos game last year at Marvel and we lost by, was it 90
points? The Ben Brown kicked 10, I guess. That was good.
Yeah, you're very happy with that. But obviously with finals on the line, so I kind of put my hand up and I said he should probably move on at the end of the year. What were your thoughts, I guess, the last 2 years, because the supporter base hasn't been too pleasant to him?
I've
struggling.
Well, I'm very much on the fence on this, because the way I looked at it comparing 2018 to 2019. The amount of experience we got rid of at the end of 2018, then into 2019, birthing, like running with those kids like Rosie Dersma Butters, Willem Drew, amongst many others, we had the exact same results, but with a younger side. So upon seeing that, as much as the inconsistency were frustrating, we were building. And to be fair, as much as this season is all over the shop, we look good. We look very good. So I'm sort of getting back on the trust of Hinkley. But yeah, so I'm not completely there, but I think we're in the right direction. I think we're going the right way.
I think, yeah, winning the finals key, because obviously that hasn't happened since 2014. A bit unlucky with the Shuey free kick against West Coast, but yeah, it's what, 4 years since a winning finals. So that's probably the frustration and the impatience, I guess, because obviously, what, 37 premierships? So, need to win.
Yeah. So you talked a bit about that topping up a couple of years ago. Like, before that, yeah, I thought Port were going to be, like, right in the mix for, like, being there, the pointy end with the top-ups, like Motlop, Watts, Rockcliffe. How did you feel about those acquisitions, that September or November?
I was very excited. My main concern was, and I remember saying this to a few workmates at the time, we're an inconsistent side and we've just added three very inconsistent players to our list. And it sort of proved that next year, really, that... that we were quite inconsistent. Rockcliffe, Watts and Motlop all spent time in the SANFL. So that said, Motlop's looked quite good this year. Rockcliffe's looked quite good. And I think Jack Watts was bound to have a decent season judging from his first 1.5 games last year. But, I was very excited when we topped up and then we're sitting 11-4 and then it all just fell apart. So,
In terms of depth as well, you built that. You got like Thomas Trengrove, McKenzie. So,
yeah, there's a few players there.
Yeah.
Trengrove's gone now, but McKenzie's obviously doing very well. We got him for free pretty much.
All delisted free agents, those boys. Thomas was a rookie, but they all played the sort of part. Jack Trengrove, I was quite disappointed in how little opportunity he got, but I think the reasoning was he was bound to be an SAFL player. McKenzie has been amazing. This year has been unreal. And see, I saw there was a bit of a question regarding Dougal Howard that you were bound to ask as well. Yeah. Regarding Dougal Howard, I was one of those people that was disgusted with that trade. I thought Dougal was a part of the future and all this, and we were replacing him with a bloke that had only played two games for the whole year. He had played two games off two years, for Port since coming across from the Gold Coast. But he has absolutely proven me wrong. His kicking is elite, and he's actually playing a real good role. And for what we got for Dougal, I'm quite pleased. I rate Bergman. I rate Williams. I think our future is looking bright, and I'll hold my hand up and I'll say I got it wrong when I say I saw that trade.
I think my only hesitation with that is I think the tall forwards like a Ben Brown or a Tom Lynch, because obviously Cleary and Jonas aren't really your tall. They're not that tall as backmen. So that's the only hesitation with me, because obviously, players like Brown, Tom Lynch kicked 5-1 last year as well. That's probably my only hesitation because, you won't want McKenzie playing against, Tom Lynch in a final or anything like that. So that's probably my thing. But, Trent McKenzie's been – it's really underrated. Like, he's getting a bit of attention in Melbourne media these days, but – if he was playing in Melbourne, he'd probably be talked about a lot more.
I completely agree with that. Tom Jonas as well, he's very capable of taking those tools as well. Ben Brown, Lord knows what happened last year when he kicked 10. That night, everything and anything went wrong. And definitely was swearing at the TV that night. But I honestly think that there's a few... our defence looks different. It looks comfortable. It looks confident. So bring it to ground. Our crumbles will take it out. I am much more composed with how our team looks now. And Dougal Howard didn't even play that game, if I recall correctly. Neither did Trent McKenzie. So now we've got a bit of structure. And I think Nathan Bassett, I think he's in charge of our back line, has done a terrific job in changing the way it looks.
In terms of underrated?
Yeah. I guess we want to talk about some players that might not get the appreciation in the mainstream media. Do you have any players that you think that don't get that playing for Port?
Well, Darcy Byrne-Jones is really one. He's starting to get a lot more. He's been absolutely terrific. Carl Amon, another. He has really fit into Jared Polek's role incredibly well. But I think the main one, and I'd say to go as far, he's probably our most important player, Todd Marshall. He has improved out of sight, and the stats that he has shown when he is in the side are remarkable. I think we've lost 5 games out of about 25 that Marshall was not played, and he makes Dixon look better. He may not get as many touches, but he needs to be in there for structural focus. So Todd Marshall is absolutely the main one who looks spick. I'm very impressed with him.
The second key forward position is really important. Yeah, like we're finding it hard without Larky because he gives Ben Brown that secondary option. As he plays that similar role, Marshall, and he's a beautiful field kick and got good skills as well.
The thing with Marshall, obviously, is he's 1%er too. Like he does a lot of smart tap ones, which you're not going to get stats for, but you can see it if you watch the whole game. But yeah, as you said, even on the weekend, like he was making blocks for Charlie. wasn't the only one, but that's what you kind of want in a forward line because it might be his turn next to kick 3 or 4.
Yeah.
Instead of Charlie is kicking six every week.
I think he is the smartest player in the game, Todd Marshall. Just look at the things he does. If you look at him closely, he knows what's going on around him. Similar to Connor Rosie, both absolute geniuses on the footy field.
Yeah, it's good nomination,
While you're talking about Rosie, so I want to ask you about the Wingard trade. So who do you think's on top with that? Because Wingard's, I mean, he's having a great season, and I got the number 20 jumper for him. I mean, Rosie's got it now, so it's not that big of a loss. But obviously we've got Rosie and Burden, who's missed, I think, 8 games with injury. Still think he's going to be a great player if he gets good run. And Wingard's, I think, 4th in the coaching
first. Yeah, I think at the time, Hawthorne paid overs, and it's sort of looking like that at the moment.
Well, Clarko was obsessed with him. Like, I think Clark, they asked him at one stage maybe a few years ago, who would you pick one player to take? And I think it was Wingard. So he paid a high price. Who do you think's on top at the moment? I know you talk it.
I think it's a win-win. Like, I can't exactly say there's on top because I'm pretty sure in terms of the pick trade, we ended up getting Rosie or Dersmer out of that. We got an extra first-round pick. So we got an extra pick out of that too. So what we got out of it is incredibly beneficial to us, and what Hawthorn got out of it is very beneficial to them. Ryan Burton's injury problems are concerning. That is a fair amount of football to miss, and I think there were a lot of concerns about his durability when he left Hawthorn. So I'm sure they were probably relatively happy to let him go on that sort of front. But I'm going to sit on the fence. I'm sorry, boys, but it's definitely a win-win, I reckon, for both sides.
Yeah, some ground against you guys. You obviously watched the match.
Wingard's having another All Australian standard year, but it's just the ability to get those kids in at the same age. Like, you got Gozma, and then you backed it up again last draft. So I think that's exciting.
Yeah, very much so.
So in terms of the COVID, so obviously we have a lot of cases here at the moment. So I think at the moment Port's playing the Saints in Melbourne. Why aren't they doing the 6-week stretch in Adelaide? I think it's your premier that's denying that at the moment for the Melbourne teams.
Yeah, obviously I'd say COVID's more important than footy, as much as Port's on top of the ladder, and I want this season to continue as much as possible. I don't really have an answer to that. I think that's going to change. I really think that's going to change. Port, I'll be very surprised if they play in Melbourne. I think they will play possibly New South Wales because their borders are open. Yeah, I think there will be a New South Wales hub as the next thing, and I don't think Port will play many games in Melbourne this year. I don't think there'll be many more games played in Melbourne this year. I think the Vic clubs will be on a hub very shortly. The solution will probably be there has to be a 2-week bye, or clubs that aren't in quarantine play 1 week, there's a bye, and then the rest of that round is continued before the rest of the before it resumes fully normally again. But there's so many hurdles to get through this season. I think it will get completed. But it's a real worry.
Do you think it'll still get completed if Victorian teams do move to a hub and some of the players with young families don't go, wouldn't that make the championship compromise?
More of an asterisk, man.
Hard one, yeah.
I wouldn't say so. Obviously, there's going to be a few people that say there's an asterisk, but it won't be. Every club is under the same conditions. It's probably, to an extent, the most fair competition we've had in a long time. Yeah. But every team plays each other once, a lot of them at neutral venues. So
yeah.
In terms of obviously the quotes from Trent Conchon today, he did say only one or two Richmond players.
Yeah.
So it has been massively blown out of proportion by a few people, I'd say. That's Richmond's going to leave 10 players or whatnot at home, which won't be the case. Richmond will be there. Richmond will be competitive. But a few players will do that, and I don't blame them at all. If they've got a kid on the way, I know where they'd rather be, and that's with their families.
I think the West Coast as well, because West Coast have been the ones that have been probably whinging the most, and I think their team has the most new dads or most kids, I guess, in that team as well. So you can kind of understand that. But yeah, I think West Coast probably took it a bit far. And I think Simo's come out and said that as well, your ex-player.
Mm-hmm.
He said that he went a bit
too far. I don't know. Teams that have won premierships like recently, which are them and Richmond, I don't know. They might be not as hungry, whereas the other teams might see it as an opportunity to, pinch one. I don't know. That's a bit disrespectful, but...
I think that the same way. I think there will be a very different premier around at the moment. I like what the potential outcome is going to be, considering who it is. Mm-hmm. But I don't think there'll be an asterisk. But every club, under the same sort of circumstance, it's going to be a very interesting season, and we're going to see two very different grand finalists this year. It could even be Port versus the Suns, which would be one of the most outrageous things ever. Matt Rowell's season so far is absolutely magnificent, and I can't wait to see what his future holds.
He's been.
I think everyone's celebrating Matt Rowell, even if not a Sun supporter.
I don't know if you know much about this. This is sort of I just thought of it then, but there's a father son that plays for Port that's in the Adelaide Academy. Is that, do you know much about that?
I think the young Paul Lace, I believe that his name is.
I think so. Is that right? Do you know?
I believe that is the case. He's Academy selected. Honestly, the draft thing still baffles me. I don't know how it all works completely.
Okay.
So Adelaide, I believe, do have access to him. And I think so do Port. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure how it works. I could very well be wrong on that.
Yeah, like if you're in your, if you're our father and son and can be in an academy, then you can choose 50-50. Like, similar to like Nick Blakey, who was his father played for Kangaroos, but he was living in New South Wales, so he became a Sydney member. Player. Yeah.
He's the draft guru. So he watches
I like it.
It's good to watch the players of tomorrow, that's for sure. I'm starting to try and get into a bit more, but it's a bit of a struggle sometimes.
I was telling Garn, like I watched one of the games, like last year's game, and Schofield for you guys, like Tej. Yeah, he looked good. He looked like a neat user, and it's a bit he's a nippy sort of a quick player. So
a bit like his dad,
He's gonna be very good. I'm very much looking forward to seeing what he can do next year.
Was that a package deal to get Jared as an assistant coach? Because obviously his son was, I think he's already committed to us for a few years. So was that kind of a package deal? Because he left, I think, Subiaco after winning 3 out of 4 flags as the coach.
Yeah, I think after a while you sort of, he's got to get a job at AFL level after that sort of success. A couple of those were unbeaten. So I'm not surprised that Scoey's back, and I'm chuffed he's back here. And even if it is to help, because his son was already, he was already in the father-son academy before he came across.
Yeah.
So I think maybe that would just help too. But he's a very smart football brain, Jared Schofield. And you can see that from even when he played. Absolute star.
Yeah. I think if Port can maintain this good form, I know they have to play a few more harder teams. Yeah, I think this week's going to be a really good, and we'll actually see where they're at.
Yeah.
But do you think if they can maintain this and finish top four, the Premier should push for Adelaide Oval Grand Final this year?
Yeah.
The Grand Finals is a very interesting question. I think I think I replied to someone on Twitter that said this. I said, they asked me, what is the sort of amount that should be all right for the MCG to be able to still have it? And I think it should match the maximum capacity of every other stadium in the country, which I believe is Perth Stadium with 65.
Yeah.
I think, I don't, unless COVID miraculously disappears from Melbourne or Victoria within the next 2 months, I don't think we'll see the AFL Grand Final, the MCG. It'd be absolutely ridiculous if we did with no crowds.
Yeah, you need a crowd.
Yeah, you absolutely need a crowd. And WA opening up to 60,000 people already, oh, by all means, get it over there. And realistically, neither West Coast or Fremantle are going to be playing in it by the looks of it. Yeah, so it's going to be a completely neutral ground. Be great to actually share the national game around every other state rather than just Victoria. I'd love to see it at Adelaide Oval. We did a fantastic job of the AFLW Grand Final when the Crows knocked off Carlton. So, yeah, fingers crossed, but I'm not entirely sure. It would feel weird away from the MCG, but hopefully that's a sign of times to change despite that contract signed with the Victorian government.
Yeah, what, 2057, I think it is. So.
Yeah, something ridiculous.
Yeah, so I think that's, the follow-up question with that is, I guess, if the options are Adelaide or Perth and they both can have full stadiums, would you relocate the grand final based on if it's a Port or a Freo or...
I think they'll go for maximum money.
Yeah, they'll have to have a plan ahead. Yeah.
That's probably Optus, isn't it?
Yeah, maximum money. Huh?
That's probably Optus. Yeah.
Yeah, it would be Optus Stadium, just because I think it holds an extra 10,000 people.
Yeah.
So it depends on the cases if they the COVID situation.
Last year the prison bars question. So how many games do you reckon we should wear it in a season? I think just the showdowns, but what's your take on that?
Well, I've got a mate who screenshotted my response to saying I'm happy with just showdown, so I need to stick by that. It is the most beautiful Guernsey in Australian sport. That is the absolute truth. It is a marvellous Guernsey. It reeks of success, and it's just intimidating. It is a beautiful Guernsey. I think, keeping with the teal factor, we will only wear it for showdowns. I think that is the push. I'd be very surprised if it was allowed for home games completely, but I think both showdowns are more than acceptable, and of course any special occasions that may pop up along the way as well.
And grand final, run.
Grand final's probably that's an exception, sure. Yeah.
That would be.
I think as long as Eddie's still president, it's never going to get across the line for more than showdown. I mean, showdown's going to be a tough ask with him as well, but. Obviously, I think the thing that doesn't get brought up as much is Eddie's the one that's against it, and his coach, like the one he's handpicked, he's, like Port royalty, like he's won a League B&F, won the best and fairest in the grand final, won a flag with Port. So,
Medal.
Yeah, exactly. So, I know Bucks is, he's kind of on our side, but he probably doesn't want to put it out there in the media because he's, with the Magpies. But, just interesting, hasn't got brought up that fact as much because, he's a, legend for Port anyway.
I think there were some quotes on it that he does like the prison bars, and obviously he didn't go too deep into it. I think there was a story not too long ago when it was all the big hoorah. But the thing is, Koshy has come out and said, like, he's absolutely slammed a lot of Eddie Maguire's points that he's made. Like, they're just not factual. Collingwood did deny Port Adelaide the opportunity to wear the prison bars in both the 2004 and 2005 Heritage Rounds, and 2006, actually.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have worn the magenta one or the blue and white hoops against Essendon and the Crows, respectively. And then we didn't participate in that 06 one because we weren't allowed to wear the prison bar.
Yeah.
Then 2007 come along, we signed that contract for future heritage rounds, and what do you know? The heritage rounds disappear.
Yeah.
So, there was a lot of absolute, non-factual stuff that Koshy has come up and slammed Eddie with. Just absolutely smashed it down. So I think we will see the prison bars twice a year in showdowns from next year.
Yeah, that'll be good.
Good to see.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Follow up.
Maybe we'll wrap it up with a quick preview of the game.
Yeah, Lions Port.
Are you confident, or do you reckon we'll beat you guys for the first time this year?
Well, I'm This is the one I've been concerned about the most. West Coast have been all over the shop. Fremantle struggling. The Crows rubbish and the Suns were rubbish. Brisbane's a different kettle of fish. They are a genuine contender this year.
Three in a row. Yep.
Yeah. As much as everyone praised the Crows and their fight against them, Brisbane kicked 10 goals, 23. That's the other way around, and it's an absolute crushing.
I think McLuggage and Neil kicked 11 between them.
11 points, yeah, 11 behinds?
Yeah.
From midfielders, that is concerning. That's when you know your midfield is slow, when it's getting two midfielders are getting 11 shots and goal off.
Yeah.
Mm.
I think it's hard. I think the under two goals either side.
Yeah.
Sorry to cut you off. Do you put someone on Neil? Do you tag him?
Yeah, because he killed us in that fixture last year as well. So that's a good. So who would you put on Neil?
I wouldn't. After last year, let him go head to head with Travis Boak.
Okay.
Because we tried to rough him up and we played the Brisbane's game and we got killed. Yeah. Port need to do their strengths. They need to play to their strengths and not worry about Lachie Neil. Port's natural game can beat Brisbane. You saw the first game last year up at the Gabba. It was like two goals. Charlie Cameron ended up killing us.
Yeah.
But he, I think Eric Hipwood kicked five as well.
Just, he took a mark. I think a couple of minutes left, that big contested mark. As well. So
this is match of the round. It's going to be good. The midfield battle. Charlie Dixon versus Harris.
Andrews, yeah.
Andrews.
I'll put this out there. Todd Marshall will kick more goals than Charlie Dixon this week.
And Motlop might be due for a good game because he's had a couple of quiet ones, and he's one of those types that can bob up and kick a couple and
He's had a few quiet weeks, especially since the showdown. He really should have won the showdown medal. To be fair, he absolutely dominated that game. He's due for sure. I'm cautiously confident, but we'll see what happens.
There's no Dan Zorko as well, I think. So he's been
ruled. Yeah, he's out early.
That's a big win for Port. That is a massive win for Port. He can often be quite a headache for our boys. So, I'm excited to see what comes, and we'll definitely see where Port Adelaide is at in 2020 with this game. Yeah. If we win, we will make the finals.
You should be looking in top four.
We should be looking at top.
Real dangerous sort of territory, actually, looking at the top four.
Next minute, season's called off.
Yeah, last time we did it, like you said, we were 11-4. So, I think one match the rest of the season. So, see how we go anyway.
Cool.
Yeah, so we'll wrap it up, I guess. So, thanks for your time, mate. Really appreciate it. We'll put something up on Twitter as well.
Not a worry at all.
Yeah, I'll keep following your port supporting as well on Twitter.
I appreciate
it, guys.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
Keep up the good work.
Yeah.